hitting record, and I am actively recording, seeing the sound waves go up and down.
I left the music on again. Oh, it turned off. Okay, we're good. All right.
I told you about the time that Brandon Diaz forgot to plug in his microphone when we were recording one day. So we had to go back in and re-record everything.
I remember that episode, actually. I remember it's like you mentioned it in the show, and but it had already been happening by the time you mentioned it. And I was like, yeah. I thought something sounded weird about every time Brandon talks in the episode. That's
because he had to go back and re-record all of the things that he said. But like, that's obviously brutal. He doesn't know exactly what he said, so he's kind of like listening to the audio and then saying his response, and so it doesn't quite flow like our normal conversation.
That's so weird. All right, we're good. All right.
Getting ready.
Hello, and welcome to episode 32 of the Foam News Collective podcast.
32?
KT, yes.
I thought it was 31.
According to the spreadsheet you made.
What?
Oh my god. I'm just going to the Foam News Collective on YouTube right now. And I'm going to look at the last
all of your pod stuff number. Says episode 31 on it.
Damn it. It is 31.
Oh, all of yours says 31.
You know what? I'm thinking about something else. That's why.
And I was going to say, even the one I did was 31. What are we talking about? It's been a week, everybody. It's been a week.
It has been one of the weeks of all time. Let me tell you. Welcome to episode... You know what? Maybe I'll just edit that onto the beginning of the next episode and we'll pretend like nothing ever happened. Welcome to episode 31 of the Foam News Collective podcast. I'm KT. I'm here with my co-host, Vile. And you know what I haven't done in a while? Even though we've already heard our guest's name, I'm gonna make him hold off for a second. How you doing, Vile? I haven't checked in with the co-hosts in a while. What's going on with you? What's new? Doesn't even have to be Nerf. Just like, what's up?
Oh my god, I've been busy. I've been a busy, busy person. It is mostly Nerf, actually, though. Well, sort of.
That's true. You've been doing a lot.
Yeah. 3D printing stuff for Polymaker. If anybody's going to the Rocky Mountain Rep Rap Festival, there's going to be blasters there. They're going to have a booth, actually, and I've been helping them to figure out how to set up that booth. And there's going to be some stuff that I printed that they're going to be able to... You could do some... target practice shooting.
It's so sick.
If you're doing that, that's one thing. Trying to do my Merge Masters build, trying to get us, I mean, even us getting ready for Maryland. Feels like there's just a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. I've had a lot of day job stuff too going on, and so it's just been kind of chaotic. My band is about to put out an EP. We're figuring all that stuff out. Just really crazy busy with stuff. But my little shining light lately has been I finally got my hands on a manga that I've wanted to read for ages. Ooh. In like 2019, I heard about this concept of you see like Mad Max and all the like apocalypse movies, and everything's like chaotic and violent, and those are fun to watch, like zombie movies and stuff. But I heard about this concept of a soft apocalypse where it's a natural disaster or whatever, like some sort of like shift in how the earth operates, but humans cooperate largely, and it's a very different kind of story. And there is a there's a manga that is sort of you'd think I would remember the name of it, considering how important it's been to me lately. Yokohama Kaidashi Kiku. I can't pronounce Japanese. But it's based around that concept. I've wanted to read it for ages. I just recently found out a couple years ago, got an English translation. So I've been picking up each of the books one at a time and taking my time and reading them and really, really enjoying it. I wrote like a song based on this concept already, and I wrote... And I built a big Lego mock based on this concept years ago that I might be displaying again at a show this year. So sort of been my centering thing recently. With us today, a returning guest to the Foam News Collective podcast, Neil, aka Boomstick Mods. How are you doing today?
Yes, I am here. I'm doing quite well indeed.
Yeah.
As Val already said, very busy prepping stuff, lots of 3D printing. As some of you who follow me on my socials may have seen, I've been printing a lot of these badges for Maryland Mayhem. It started as a small thing I did for my squad, but I started expanding it. Pretty much every time somebody asked me to make them one, I just add them to the next pretty much bundle of badges that I've made. I think I'm currently sitting at 52 badges that are that not need to be made because I'm done most of them.
It's so sick. Do you want to explain how they work to folks who might not be familiar?
As soon as I stop knocking things off my desk, that would be great. Yeah, the badges are essentially two pieces, and you wear the badge during the HVZ. And when you get tagged, you separate the two pieces. There's one piece that has usually your logo and name on it. That's yours to keep, essentially my gift to the people who I'm making these for. But the back section has your name and a picture of a brain on it. You give that to the zombie that tags you. Essentially, you're giving the zombie that tags you your brain.
Yeah, that's so good. And it's so cool for like both people to have like a memento to take away from it. And of course, it makes anyone with the tag more of a target.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah. That is part of the fun. And the reason I ended up making it a two-piece design, and I was fortunate that my friend Donut Cat had a badge design that already separated into two pieces that they were able to adjust to fit my needs. So all I didn't have to design something brand new. I could just take an existing design that one of my friends had already made and just slap different names and logos on them as needed, which was very nice and much more convenient than having to come up with a whole brand new system. But so many of my crew were like, hey, can you print me a second one for me to keep? That it became like a necessity that I'm like, I'm already printing two. I might as well make it a conjoined kind of system.
Right. Yeah, that's really, really cool. I'm super thankful that you're making them for us, that we're going to have them there. So if you're a listener, you know what brains to go for.
Not mine.
It's out there, man. It's out there.
I just made myself a bigger target.
Yeah, it's true. we're about, well, as of recording, we are recording on Wednesday, a few days before this episode will come out. And our next episode, 32, will come out the podcast comes out on the second day of Maryland Mayhem. The show comes out on the first day, on the Friday, the 19th. You're a couple weeks out. How are you feeling right now? I'm skipping over something because we got a lot into your background the last time you were on the show. If you're listening to the show and you're not familiar with Boomstick, go back a few episodes, check that out. We go way more into his past and stuff. But will you briefly explain your role in Maryland Mayhem before we get into
so
that?
My role in Maryland Mayhem is I'm one of the, I would say, four heads of the Maryland Foam Alliance. We all work together on the kind of PvP front, and we're working obviously with UMBC for the HVZ event, where we're mainly taking care of the Maryland Foam Tournament and 11th Hour and assisting with like prep and like early morning setup and helping with chronographing and whatnot for the UMBC. But like outside of the pretty much outside of the game for UMBC, we're running or helping out with everything outside of that. And my specific role, a lot of my work has kind of been twofold, where I run the majority of the social media I run all the social media for Maryland Foam Alliance, and I do the majority of the social media for Maryland Mayhem. I do appreciate the help that Lex gives me, because Lex is our main, I would say, UMBC contact that we work with, and she also does a lot of So pretty much any of the UMBC specific social media is usually done by Lex, and I appreciate not having to do the social media by myself because it's a lot of work.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I get bogged down.
I'm also
feeling
the other big thing that I'm doing for Maryland Mayhem is I kind of ended up in the role as head ref and kind of rule codifier for the Maryland Foam Tournament. I've had a lot of help with both the making and the organization of the rules that I have, I wasn't even in the original people who started making the rules. I just inherited the existing rules from last year and was told to pretty much update this.
I mean,
had some help.
You know, I'm working on a rule book for a different game right now, and yours is the most inspiring one I've seen among any of the tournaments that we have. It's very clear. It's very delineated. It's every rule has like breakdowns and numbers. It's easy to refer to things if something comes up. It's looking great. I don't know how much of that is handed down and how much of that is you, but regardless, collectively, y'all have done a great job.
None of the organization of the rules was done by me, I will say that.
Well, great job to whoever did that.
That would be the game mode repository. They did the majority of the organization of the rules, which I was really appreciative of. Then one of my refs, Justin, stepped in after I edited the rules a bunch. And by me editing the rules, it messed up the formatting of the rules. So if you noticed any formatting issues, that was usually my fault from me updating the rules as we went. Because I think we've done, since we announced the first update to the rules after Maryland Mayhem last year, I think we've updated like 5 or 6 times, just trying to get every single thing covered. And now we're done updating the rules for upcoming Maryland Mayhem. And I'm really hoping that I don't have to update it much more in the future. Because that is an exhausting process of trying to, because it's a competitive game where like, not that regular game modes don't matter, but there's the sense of like, you know, everyone having fun and whatnot. And you can rely on the spirit of the rules a lot more. Whereas with a competitive game, you kind of got to have every nitty gritty thing kind of nailed down as much as possible. Now we still rely on the spirit of the spirit of the rules and player honesty and integrity and whatnot a lot in our hobby. And so not every little thing is nailed down as well as say like a professional sport, but I think for our hobby, it's about as nailed down as we could get it, which I'm really happy with. And again, super appreciative of all the people who have helped me with the rules and everything. Because usually it'll come down to I'll share the rules with my refs usually before an official posting of the rules. They'll go through it and then I'll post it publicly and people look at it. And then I've been taking their feedback and going, all right, well, this feedback makes sense. This feedback makes sense. This feedback can't do that because of somewhere else in the rules, which clearly says otherwise. So it's been a lot of that. And so I actually feel like I've got a pretty good handle on the rules now, just because I've had to read through it so many times during the editing process.
Like, it sounds like a lot of your job, and I find myself in this kind of position a lot as well. A lot of the role that you really have in this is being the person that sort of interconnects everybody else. Would you say that's true?
There's a lot of
you're kind
getting
of
other people's
point.
Help and
in a lot of ways.
Go ahead.
Probably not alone. I know, you know, other people are doing stuff like that, but it seems like, you know, sort of being the person that sort of interconnects things that are going on. So with that in mind, back to my real question, how are you doing? How are you balancing this project and regular life? Because it's hard work, you know, like everyone gets to an event like this and there's so much going on and there's so much to enjoy. And it's like, you got to kind of stop and remember like, hey, people did this, like people put this together so we could enjoy this. And so I just kind of want to see like, how you holding up, man?
So the short answer is I'm not. I am unfortunately very bad at my work-life balance situation, to where when I'm in charge of something, I'm kind of an all or nothing kind of person. So I kind of give it my all, which is very bad for long term. It's something I personally try to work on. And I'm not so great at it right now, but it's something I'm working towards trying to do. But no, currently I'm not so good at the work-life balance. I tend to kind of run myself ragged. There have been several days where, like, I've spent all day working on Maryland Mayhem and Maryland Film Alliance stuff, to where, like, I get to 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I am wiped, and like I'm done for the day, to where I'm like, I cannot exude any more brain power today, because it is all spent on all the stuff that I've been working on from pretty much, because there'll be days where I'll start working on stuff at like 8 o'clock in the morning and then go the entire day. Like, this was especially true when I was working on the rules video, because that was all me. That was my recording of the audio, editing the audio, or not editing it really, but more just trimming it down into a manageable form. The video, coming up with all the graphics, every little thing there. And like, I had to get it done before the live stream, and there was a, last minute change to where we were originally going to go over the rules on the live stream, but then there was a last minute change, and then I was also going away that weekend, so I couldn't work on it during the weekend because we were visiting family that weekend. And so I had all of Monday and Tuesday cranking out that video. Spent about 24 hours just pretty much editing, like 12 hours on Monday, 12 hours on Tuesday of pretty much nothing but working on the rules video for that, which was I don't want to do that again.
That stuff is really hard. Work-life balance, especially when you have something going on that has, you know, you run an event like this, that your deadlines are hard deadlines. It's the same as in theater or in the arts and in competition and all the sports competitions and stuff. It's like, this is the day that it has to happen by, and things have to happen a certain amount of time before that so that people have time to find the information they need. And learning how to build the time in so that you start early enough, or you know that you have a process that's going to keep you from getting bogged down. We've had that. We had hard versions of that lesson starting off the news show. It was like every 2 weeks we got to come back and do this. And it took a lot for us to figure out how to do it in a way that wasn't going to just destroy us from week to week. So It's challenging. I don't envy that, but I also believe in your ability to figure that out. And I also know that it's worth it. Mayhem was amazing last year. I had an amazing time. I'm super excited to be there with even more friends, with Vile, with Axel Sorax, one of our moderators, is going to be there, and some other folks that I noticed on the badges that are coming out who I haven't gotten to engage with before, who are supposed to be there. I think it's going to be really, really fun. Could we go through all the sort of different parts of Maryland Mayhem for someone who might be their first time coming? Like, they've probably looked at the website or whatever, but like, it might be nice to hear us sort of talk through it. And I really want to kind of highlight what's going to be different this year from last year. So like, I know that you're kind of doing the same 3 days in the same order. The first day is the competition day, but for starters, you're moving the, I forget what you're calling it, but the like,
BlasterCon,
you're moving that to day three instead of having it on the competition day, right?
That is correct.
And I say right as if I don't specifically know that we are scheduled to do a BlasterCon table, and I know darn well what day it is, but yes, why'd you make that move?
So that was based off of a lot of feedback we got last year from our vendors. Unfortunately, that was, I think, one of the things that we kind of dropped the ball on, is our kind of pseudo convention that we had last year, with it being on Friday, the same day as the tournament. We didn't really give it enough attention on social media for enough people to be aware of it. We promoted it some, but not enough to really generate interest. And then the people who were there were usually players or staff, and they were really too busy to really enjoy the convention side of things.
Right.
So kind of getting all that feedback, we decided let's move the main convention to Sunday, and then, which is the 11th hour blaster battle, which has been outdoors the past 2 years. And this is part of the reason why our financial goal was higher this year, is because we moved Sunday's event indoors. That pretty much doubled our financial cost for this year. Now, we are very grateful that we did.
Am I correct that it's not the same venue as Friday?
That is correct. Friday is Soccer Dome 1. Sunday is Soccer Dome 2.
Is either
same
one
company,
of those
different where, building.
Is either one of those where we were last year for competition? Or is that a different place completely?
Maryland Foam Tournament is in the exact same venue. So people who were there last year for the Maryland Foam Tournament, it's in the exact same venue.
And then so the Soccer Dome 2 is the same company, but it's in a different place?
Correct. They own two different buildings. We wanted to make it the same building just to make it easy. But unfortunately, scheduling-wise for Sunday didn't work out with that venue, which is why we ended up at Soccer Dome 2 for 11th hour. Oh, and if I may,
excited.
I know I
I'm excited
was
for an indoor 11th hour because, like, last year was super fun. We had a great time. But it was also, like, simultaneously feeling the threat of rain and also, like, I constantly had to apply sunscreen. It was just, like, after doing that for the HVZ the day before, doing it for 2 days in a row, it's, like, a little bit much. I think this seems like a really nice vibe. I'm excited to see this indoors. I think that's going
to
be really cool.
Yes. I think the only downside to moving indoors is you won't have the same PvP experience as the past 2 years, where it was a lot of people on a decent-sized field. And while the field that we're going to be playing on Sunday is still a decent-sized field, it's about half the size of the field that we had last year's, or the standard Maryland. That's essentially our standard Maryland Nerf Herder field that we play on. But because we're moving indoors, and again, we had to move indoors because we had to put the BlasterCon on Sunday. So that kind of forced Sunday to be indoors. We decided that shouldn't be a big deal because last couple years, it's been 11th hour. The only thing happening is the Nerf War. So, of course, everyone is just playing on the field. Whereas this year, it's a blaster battle and a convention kind of thing. And so people will most likely be kind of floating between the two. And so it won't be as big of a, or at least the player count on the field won't be as big because there's more to do on Sunday than there's been in previous years.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that a lot. Going back to day one, we talked a little bit about the rules. Is the game type is the same from last year for competitive?
Yes, it is still Flag Dash, which is the same game mode as last year. It has changed a decent bit. This is why I've told pretty much everyone this year, whenever they have a complaint about the way things have been handled this year, whether it's one thing or another, because, you know, people can't do anything perfect and someone's always going to have, you know, a suggestion of how it should be done better. The way I've been telling people is like, look, we're going to do the same thing we did last year. We're going to put out our feedback forums. Any issues that you run into, please put it in the feedback forum. We look at it, we read through it, and it does affect the upcoming year. And so, yeah, we looked at the feedback we got last year and what we wanted to change for the actual tournament this year. The big changes for this year is instead of a practice field, we now move the teams to where the practice field was because the practice field wasn't really used last year. And this will give the teams more space. Still have vendors on Friday. We allowed our top sponsors, or I think our top two tiers of sponsors, to set up booths and whatnot, kind of in the same place that they were last year. But these are specifically just the sponsors. Because they are sponsors, we kind of gave them an extra day to have a table space as an additional way to say thank you. And then this also allows people who want to watch that space that all the players were in last year. So we think that'll really help out as far as the environment of the Maryland Phone Tournament, to where I know people were crammed in the corner, or the teams were crammed, kind of crammed where they were.
Yes, it was very tight.
We're really hoping that this fixes that.
Yeah. It was very tight over in the team zone. And I, as a spectator, the spectator experience was okay. Having more space, I think, to settle in and kind of watch a game for a long time sounds really, really nice. Vile and I will just be swinging by and checking it out that day, I think, anyway. So,
yeah, I will say this, if you can come by and watch, I highly recommend it. Like, I know I'll have the best seat because I'll be on the field as head ref, but you know, they're going to be some very intense matches because that was the other thing. We changed the brackets for this year. Now, it's still a group stage and an elimination stage, but it's now 18 teams instead of 16. And only 16 teams can make it over to the elimination bracket. So two of the teams that score the least in the group stage overall will be eliminated.
Yeah.
So that was our kind of compromise to allow additional teams to compete, because we, even like this year, like the Maryland Phone Tournament kind of filled up way faster than we were expecting. And so as soon as that happened, and then more teams were like, hey, we really want to get in on this, like, all right, well, we'll set up a waiting list just in case, you know, other teams drop out or can't make it. And then during that process, like, all right, well, let's look at our timetable. What can we do to allow more teams to make it in without taking away matches or anything from the already existing teams? And that's when we were doing math and figuring out like our timetable as far as how long things are going to take, making sure that we're setting aside a good chunk of time for whether it be disputes or issues or anything of that matter. And we ended up coming to the compromise that we did with the 18 in the group and 16 in elimination, which allowed two more teams to join in for the Maryland Foam Tournament, which is another change for this year.
Does it seem like Mayhem overall has an increased... are you expecting even bigger numbers of people than last year overall, or is it just sort of the competitive thing that seems
last
to be sort of
bursting
year, at the
seams? I want to say... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're good.
Last year, I want to say we had around 300 people overall for the weekend. I think I'd have to go back and actually look at my numbers. This year we're expecting between 300 and 500 is what we're planning on for this year. Currently have, I think, like 270, 275, something like that, currently registered. And I'm expecting that number to easily go past 300 by the time we get to the event, and we'll see if other people are like registering like the last minute because they haven't realized that they need to register for the event. Which, by the way, everyone who registers and attends the event, we do have some very nice things that you get to go home with. That was another thing that we changed for this year. We do have the custom bandana that a lot of other large scale events have, which is something that, like, we as the hobby, we love the custom bandanas. Like, especially like me personally, I've gotten one from End War, I've gotten one for Ragnaroktoberfest, so like that was something that I really wanted for this year, and I was really happy we were able to meet our goals in order to get that. We're also doing badges to help with the check-in process, essentially, so that way we know who's checked in. So, like, pretty much everyone who, after you check in, you're going to get a lanyard, which has some more of our sponsors' logos on it, as well as a badge where you can put your name. And that way, we know this person's checked in. Everyone who checked in has to have one of those badges. And you only have to check in once. So if you're checking in on Friday, you'll get your badge, you'll get your bandana, and you'll be able to have that. You don't have to check in the other 2 days as long as you have your badge. That's how we know that you've registered, signed the waivers, and done all of that.
That's cool. That's a nice system.
Yeah.
That's definitely an improvement.
Yeah.
Is that based on specific issues from last year or just something that you just couldn't make happen last year?
I mean, it's definitely, I wouldn't necessarily call it an issue from last year. It was more of a, we have no idea if everyone actually registered and signed the waiver or not. Mm. Like, we told people they were supposed to, but we have no idea if they actually did. You know, because when you're dealing with crowds of that size,
yeah,
like, how do you know? Like, and it's like, we didn't have bandanas, we didn't have badges, we didn't have anything to show that, yes, I went through the check-in process, you know?
Right. Speaking of custom bandanas, what's changed? I know that you're not primarily in charge of the HVZ, but what's changed with the HVZ this year? What's changed with UMBC's part of the event? Is there anything that happened last year that they were like, well, we gotta change this?
A couple of things changed for this year. I can only speak partially on what I know some of the changes are, one of which being, I know last year iPro was not required for the HVZ. That has changed for this year. iPro is required. That is one of the things that Dart Zone was donating for us, so that way we could be able to provide eye protection for everyone. And there's also, because we are supplying bandanas, we are making it to where players have to have an orange armband marker, to where I know that was an issue in previous years where people weren't sure who was an active player because it could be any brightly colored bandana or armband or whatever.
Right.
So now with this year, it's like only orange is allowed as a marker. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be the one we're providing. I know a couple of my players like to use like specific, like stretchy armbands that stay on their arm better when they're a human. But as long as it's orange, which that should at least cut down on some of the confusion.
Cool. That'll be nice.
But those are the two main changes I know from last year. I'm not exactly sure. I know we are, by the time you're listening to this episode, there should be a post up already talking about what blasters are not approved based on like silhouette and whatnot. I know that was confusing for some people last year. Yeah. We've been working with the UMBC team, trying to make sure that information is as available to our attendees as possible. Like, we recently put up like reminders for the chronograph numbers, reminding players that, like, hey, for UMBC, you cannot chronograph with worker heavies. You can use worker heavies, but you can't get a blaster checked with worker heavies.
Right.
And I know we had some people who weren't sure about that, so it's nice to be able to make sure that the people coming to this event have this information, so that way they're not surprised. I know last year several people were surprised that the Dart Zone Mark II wasn't allowed without the large muzzle, which is the same this year, but there's a couple of other blasters I know that are on the not allowed due to silhouette list. And it'll be good for players to have that information before they get to the event, without having to like get it approved on the Discord or something like that. And I mean, that's the other thing. We also have a Discord this year, which I think has helped out a lot, to where we have kind of this central hub that people can utilize that I think will really help with both communication and like getting answers. Like, a lot of people have used the Maryland Mayhem Discord for getting blaster colors approved and blaster silhouettes approved, like getting all of that figured out before they make it to the event, which has been very useful, because I know that's like one of those things where it's like, you don't want to bring a blaster, then you get to the event and it's like, oh, sorry, can't use that, you know?
Right. It's really important for those things to be communicated ahead of time in a way that's really clear. That's a challenge for sure, because people travel a long way to come to stuff like this, and it's like, you prep all your gear. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that you're doing all that stuff. One last question before we get to the questions from our Ko-Fi subscribers. How do you plan around handling the unexpected? I know that like last year there was some stuff with, you know, it was the largest, the most people UMBC had ever had at their event. And they did a great job of handling it. But I know that they were kind of flummoxed by just the sheer number of people that they were trying to wrangle. And some stuff happened that I think might have been a result of that. And like, I'm curious how y'all sort of plan around what having the room to respond to things that you may not be expecting. I know that you're just talking about the possibility of having up to 500 people, I think, is a big part of that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, this is a thing where I can't say too much about it because I'm not a mod for UMBC. So
well,
I don't
I'm using UMBC as an example. I'm using UMBC as an example, but I just mean in general. Because like, if you have that many people, you're going to have most of those people all weekend.
Yes. Yes, that is true. As far as handling things that are unexpected, we've tried to make things as, I'm going to say, dummy-proof as possible. Obviously, nothing's going to be perfect. We've tried to set up systems in place to make sure people can get the information that we need. As far as unexpected, like, I feel like our response for any kind of injury or emergency like that will be essentially handled in pretty much the same manner as it would even if it was on a smaller scale. Obviously, on a large scale, like, things are obviously more likely to happen. But as far as maybe I'm just not thinking of, like, because usually when you say unexpected things happening, I'm thinking of like weather, injury, you know, things like that. I would say that our team is fairly experienced at kind of rolling with it, with whatever it may be.
Right.
With both the UMBC team and the Maryland Film Alliance team, we've all kind of dealt with unexpected things in the past. And so we kind of rely on our experience in dealing with those situations in order to be prepared for things that could potentially happen when things get bigger.
Yeah.
I feel like I really rambled on that one.
No. I mean, that I think that's an appropriate answer, honestly. Like, is not your first rodeo.
Yeah.
And
if I may, I definitely want to, I know I've been talking about like my responsibilities a lot and everything that I'm doing, but I definitely want to make sure to say that like, I'm not the only person working on this. Like, the Maryland Film Alliance team is more than just me. It's me and Ben and Cordell. And of course, you know, Dart Sweep, and then the amazing UMBC mods. They've been very, very good to work with this year. We've been communicating well. 'Cause again, it's an interesting situation because we're not one unit working on this whole event. It's two units working together on a whole weekend.
Right.
So I feel like that makes it rather unique in the way that communication is handled. So I really want to just shout out the whole team that's working on Maryland Mayhem, because we've all been working hard on it.
Yeah.
Don't let me make it sound like I'm the only one doing work.
Hear. No, I, like I said, last year was amazing. I'm really excited to come back. I can only imagine.
And that's actually probably the main reason why we're working so hard, is we kind of set an expectation of what Maryland Mayhem is last year. And we know we kind of need to, like, last year, there's a lot of grace because it was the first year that we had ever done it. So obviously it wasn't perfect. There were issues, and like, no large scale event is going to be perfect. And so there will always be issues, but this year is our second year. So there's kind of like this expectation of, all right, you had last year, you put on a good event, but now this is the second year. You guys should kind of know what you're doing. And so we're really trying to make sure that we've shown that we've taken what we've heard from last year and adapted and grown from it in order to be able to put on an even better event that can go even more smoothly.
Cool. Segueing gently into some questions from folks outside. Well, it's actually a really easy segue because most of these questions are related to Mayhem. We have a Ko-fi, and a way that you can support the Foam News Collective show and the podcast is by following us there. And one of the perks of subscribing to the Ko-fi, of donating, is that you get to ask our podcast guests questions every episode. And we got a couple here. And Vile, I feel like you've been cut out of so much of the conversation. Do you want to read? You want to read Ghost's question for us?
Sure. I mean, you know, I haven't actually been to a large event, so I'm just taking it all in. Don't worry about it. It's fine. This will be my first time going to a large event like this, so you know, it's all new to me.
I'm so pumped we get to go together.
Yeah, I know, this is going to be great. So Ghost asks, what would you say the big difference is between running a large event like Maryland Mayhem versus a local event, and what advice would you give someone that's running an event for the first time? And that is for kind you, of Boomstick. Flows. That's going to be, you're going to be the expert here. I don't know anything about this.
The expert. That kind of falls on what I said when we first started talking, to where running a local event, that's something that I did pretty much by myself on and off. I had the occasional admins for a while, but they never seemed to stick around for up until like a couple years ago. So like I can run a local event by myself. I've gotten pretty good at handling that and handling the kind of like the social media side, the promoting of a smaller event. It's everything that you do for those small events, but like so much more. Like your promoting needs to start like a year in advance. Your planning of the event has to be so much more detailed because you're dealing with more people. You can't just rely on your locals who know how the game works and can like help along other people who are new. It requires so many more people to run a large event. You cannot do a large event by yourself. In my opinion, I don't think it's a good idea to go into a large event by yourself. You need a team that you can work with and can kind of break up responsibilities. Whereas with a local event, you can... Now, I still don't recommend running local events by yourself. I highly recommend having a team. But it's doable. Whereas I feel like with a large-scale event, you need the team, and you need a team that can work together despite differences. Like me and my Maryland Film Alliance team, we have disagreements all the time. The main thing is the fact that we can come together and be like, all right, this is the decision that the group has made. Whether or not everyone agreed with it doesn't matter. The group is moving forward with this, and we all need to be on board with what's being decided. Mm. And there's a lot of kind of approval processes that you're setting up that aren't usually in place for smaller events. Again, there's the steps you take for a small event. Like, there's so many more steps. And I'm not trying to discourage people from hosting large events, because I'm so excited to see more and more large events popping up. And I'm trying to experience as many different ones as I can.
Yeah,
which is difficult to do. But if you can have a good team to run an event, I think you'll pretty well be set up. I think it really all comes down to your team and who you have running.
Mm. Would you
and
say
if I can add one more thing to that,
real quick, would you say with that, would your local event and running your local event be a good way to get a team or to find people that you can bring on to a team to help you get into running those larger events, actually, just as kind of an add-on question?
100%. That's kind of a good testing area to see how well do certain people handle certain situations. Like, how well does this person handle running a game? How well does this person handle conflict? How well does this person handle being reliable and showing up on time and everything. These are all kind of places where you can see this is how this person handles responsibility. That will in turn kind of show you the exact way that they're going to act in a larger scale event. I think that's a perfect testing ground for finding a good team. And obviously my main experience is with PvP, but this also goes for HVZ. You have your local mods and whatnot. If you're wanting to bring people on for larger events, see how they handle the smaller ones. And that's a great way of looking at them and going, this is where you do your best. Like, we have team members or volunteers helping us that are in the places where they do the best. Like, I have one of my referees from last year, they requested to be in a different spot, and now they're going to be our dart checker at our dart station because they didn't want the, or they were feeling a lot of the pressure of being a referee. And so it's like, actually, that's a good point. They handle that station better than they would be as a referee. And so it's finding what roles do people, or what roles are people good at that they can fill in for a large event? Because you can't have everyone doing the same thing.
Delegating per their strengths.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Delegation is so important, and it's such a challenge too. Colin of Go Slow Taco had basically the same question. I'm going to be leading my first HVZ game this summer. Do you have any advice for someone who's never done it before? Please see the last 3 minutes of the podcast. But also added, continuation of the last question, how important is theme to an HVZ game? Do you feel like players really care about theme and cohesiveness in the story? Or do you think they're there to just shoot zombies?
Okay, so... Again, my expertise is more in the PvP, but I have experience as an HVZ player, and obviously I work with the UMBC mods for Maryland Mayhem in a in a backroom kind of situation. Yep. My advice for one is talk to people who run events. Like, we have lots of very experienced people who run HVZ events. Get a hold of the UMBC team, talk to maybe the Survival Fest team, the Mom Mutation Madness, the RAG people. Find people who run local events. Maybe not RAG. I'm thinking big events. Find people who run local events, because that's if that's what you're planning on running, find people who do what you're wanting to do and ask them for advice on what works best. What have they tried? What haven't they tried? What has worked for them? What issues have they run into? I get asked questions about PvP events. I think at least once a month, somebody will ask me about starting events. And I have kind of this laundry list of things where, like, here, well, here's what we've done that's worked. Here's what you can do. Here's what we have done. And I find that to be incredibly useful, especially if you can find people who have more recently started. Not saying that people who have been doing it for a long time haven't, but I feel like there's a big difference between established versus newly established. And there's a mix of advice that you can get from both of them. Because I find that talking to the people who are more newly established, how they got established is incredibly valuable, as opposed to the people who've been around longer, who got established years ago, and obviously with time, things have changed. Like, I've told people about that when it comes to PvP events. Like, when I first started, this is what I ran into. This might not be the same as what you might run into.
Well, and this is the same thing that people bump into when they're trying to get their start on YouTube or whatever. It's like, the game's just not the same now.
Not at all. That's something I could talk on for a long time as well, just because the barrier to entry for YouTube is so much higher now than it used to be 10 years ago, or however long ago YouTube was first getting started. But it's an interesting, going back to the main question of, or I guess the follow-up question about theme. Now, this is an interesting thing that I've been on the side of where I've heard both perspectives on it, and I can only look at it as a player. I enjoy a good theme. Now, the issue that I see, not necessarily with myself, because I'll enjoy a theme whether it's there or not. Mm-hmm. I know some players find themes too limiting and distracting for what they want to do. But I feel like a well-rounded theme that kind of flows across the event is nice. And it does add some good flavor to an event. However, you want to make sure that your technical side of your game is solid before you wrap your theme into it, kind of deal. That's just my perspective on it. I know some people differ, and I am obviously more of a attendee and player, not so much a planner for HVZ, so take my opinion on that with a grain of salt.
Would you, even with that grain of salt, would you suggest that someone running their first HVZ just let the theme be zombies the first time and then consider themes in subsequent games?
Absolutely. I if you're running your first game, like, HVZ comes pre-packaged with your starting theme. Like, the starting theme of Humans versus Zombies is already kind of a step of a theme. You don't need to add things onto it for your first event. Like, for me personally, I would recommend starting with just the theme being Humans versus Zombies. I'm a big proponent of the KISS system, which is keep it sweet and simple.
It's free theme estate. Okay, we have one last question, which is our bonus question that comes from the winner of last episode's raffle. And because Beret, our prior podcast guest, was able to get 2 out of 3. I'm still laughing about that. 2 out of 3. You're going to have to listen to the last episode if you want to know what we're laughing about. 2 out of 3 trivia quiz questions, correct? Oh yeah, that game is new to you, Boomstick. I don't know if you're up on our episodes, but we play a new trivia game now.
So my son was on spring break last week, so I am behind currently on all of my podcasts, including this one, unfortunately.
Oh, it's all good. So actually, since I think the episode after you were last on, we started playing a 3-question trivia game, which is tailored to each guest. And if the guest is able to get 2 out of 3 questions, hint, we want you to win, and we'll probably bend the game to make that happen. But if you're able to get 2 out of 3 questions, a randomly selected, I didn't pick the person. Dang it. Hold on. a randomly selected person from our Discord will get, not randomly selected, they have to enter whatever. Join the Discord if you're interested in getting a free question for our podcast guests, is what I'm trying to say. But the winner from the last one was General Strife, a young upcoming content creator and someone who is apparently interested in what his question is about, which is, how would I properly start getting into 3D modeling?
And that question's for me.
That's for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
That's why I asked you about this before we came on.
You did. So I'll start by saying I'm not the right person to ask this. I have some CAD experience, but it's all in Tinkercad. And you can do some decent things in Tinkercad. That's where I've did all the designing for the badges and whatnot through Tinkercad, along with the targets I recently designed and a couple of other things. Like, you can do a lot with Tinkercad. I know a lot of people kind of dunk on Tinkercad because you're essentially very limited in what you can do. But if you want to start somewhere, like it is a free program that gives you a starting point, you kind of have to, I think the biggest con to Tinkercad as a starting point, or the reason I would not recommend Tinkercad, is if you're wanting to jump to other CAD programs after Tinkercad, you can't really take any of your Tinkercad skills with you because it's such a different kind of program than, say, like Fusion or anything like that. So if you're wanting to really get into CAD and down the line get into something like that, I wouldn't recommend Tinkercad. But if you're just looking to mess around with files, like there's, I've edited lots of files in my time with Tinkercad of, I need something to do this specific thing, or rather, I need this part to do something slightly different. Like I've modified triggers to kind of work better with their catch. I've modified pushers to be a little bit longer. I've modified a whole bunch of things. And I do think that Tinkercad is fair, again, because I don't have any experience outside of Tinkercad, it's fairly easy to add or take away things from files, as well as kind of dabbling in creating your own things. Like, you can create some pretty neat things with Tinkercad, but if you're wanting to dive deeper into the Cataverse, or whatever you want to call it.
That's my new theme. Now I'm going to call it Cataverse.
I personally wouldn't recommend starting with Tinkercad just because I think you won't learn anything that you'll need later down the line, at least in my experience.
Putting Into the Cataverse as a possible title along with its free theme estate.
You know, we've had discussions on that stuff before in the Discords, and I'm a background in CAD, and I always look at it as the sense of who you are as a person is going to absolutely determine what is going to work well for you. Some people absolutely love Tinkercad. Some people hate it. It, you know, it's the same thing with any process, right? Whether you're doing Fusion or Onshape or Blender or FreeCAD or whatever, there's a plethora of tools available out there. And the only real way I would state is to get started. You have to just try one. And you may love Tinkercad and come up with really cool designs. There's full blasters that have been built in Tinkercad. It has its unique style, and some people really mesh well with it, which is why I don't knock it. I think it's great. Some people are perfect with it, and they'll be content using it. But like you're stating, same thing. If you want to get into real CAD or like the stuff that's a little bit more like, you know, industry style, you have to get into the other ones. And maybe you get into them and you take to it really well, but you kind of have to just try. I think that's the only real way is to properly start, is just start, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Radioactive was in the Discord today saying that, like, he does everything in Tinkercad.
It's great. It's the best program ever. It is the best.
This was my point. This was my point in that conversation, and I make this point a lot. The effort that you've put into learning a tool is more valuable than whatever features another tool might have.
Yep.
In most cases.
Yeah. 100%.
So, like, if you are Radioactive and you have spent, maybe you're one of the people that proves that, yeah, Tinkercad is a very powerful tool. Like, it has a lot of potential. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right place for another person to start, but clearly the potential is there. Mm-hmm. And if you've invested the time in learning that tool and you've really become comfortable with it, you stick with it. There's no reason, like, don't move to something else if the tool that you're using is doing what you need.
Lean into that
effort that you've already put in. Lean into that time that you've spent learning that tool. So,
I have one major critique of Tinkercad. This is from somebody who uses Tinkercad solely. It needs a chamfer tool. That's the one thing I really wish it had, was a chamfer tool.
Just to knock corners down, basically, really easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Manually getting rid of corners is such a pain.
You have to, like, make a triangle and turn it into a hole.
But it's a huge pain.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to merge a void or
like
whatever.
The one thing it needs is just like, can I just chamfer this edge? Can I feel like, because I know other CAD programs have that. Mm-hmm. It'd be so much easier.
Yeah.
It's my one major complaint.
All right. So you'll have plenty of complaints after we play our brand new, not brand new, but our new trivia game. I ran my random number generator on the people who reacted to the post in the Discord, and the we're going to say potential winner, because no weird time travel is happening here, is Spants with a 4 instead of an A. I don't think I know you, but I'm excited to meet you when I come to you asking for a question. Maybe, if Boomstick gets all the questions right somehow. But you are the winner of the raffle. And if when Boomstick gets the questions, we'll be in touch about getting your question for our next guest, which will be Drac on episode 32. So start thinking about your questions for Drac. Today, we're going to play a game with you called Boomstick or Broomstick. That's right. We'll be asking you questions about various sweeps throughout the foam blaster hobby. What do you think you know about that?
About sweeps? Like dart sweeping?
Just sweeps in general. Sweeps.
Okay. Like,
just sweeps. You know,
just sweeps.
Sweeps.
All right. How do I think I'm gonna do? I'm gonna give it my best.
Vile, why don't we, since it's just two of us, why don't we do something different? Do you want to just read all the questions and I'll do the answers and the explanations?
Sure.
Yeah, why don't we do the question? Like,
all right.
Yeah. All right. I guess read the question and the options, and then I'll do the follow-up talking.
Perfect.
Let's do it like that.
All right. So first question. There's no dispute. Only one competitive foam-flinging team swept the 2022 Dart Zone Pro Tour in East Rochester, New York, with a 6-0 record. Was it A, Flower City Fallout?
I was gonna say, I know this one.
B,
I know this one.
Frumble. Or C, Rochester Radioactive.
That would be C, Rochester Radioactive.
You are entirely correct. Flower City Fallout were the runners-up. Frumble were the runners-up from next year's Foam Pro Tour. Nobody swept that particular competition. And as a quick side note, RIP, rest in peace, Rochester Radioactive member Andrew Hunsinger. His brave battle with cancer ended late last year, and he was in that competition, which is so badass. Part of that team sweeping the game. Just wanted to mention that really quick. I didn't get to meet him, but I've heard great things. All right, next question.
All right. So, in his 2017 video on the Weasel Nut Gatherer as a rival high-impact round-sweeping tool, Luke from Out of Darts explained why he doesn't carry them in the shop. Was it A, unable to source them, B, take up too much storage space, or E, rival is dead anyway?
That's... I'm trying to remember, because like I
remember this video.
See,
too,
I don't remember the exact reason, so now I'm just trying to logic it out in my head. Like, they are definitely a bulky. Oh yeah, because no, this is before the collapsible one too. So I'm gonna go with B. They take up too much space.
You are 2 for 2 so far. You nice. Got it. I built this question to be logicked out, so I'm glad you noticed that. I'm glad you figured that out. The other big hint, of course, is this is pre-warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good point.
2017 is pre-warehouse.
Well, even just knowing Luke in general, like, you know Luke's all about, like, trying to, like, condense down as much as possible.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like my issue is I think of my garden weasel, which is a collapsible one, and so it actually stores fairly easily. So, like, right. I had to real quick in my head go back and go, oh, wait, no, the ones when we first found them, they had, you know, the long handle, not collapsible. And so it was just kind of bulky to transport.
Those are the ones I have. Those are the ones I have because I just, I've always had those ones. So I don't have, I one of
highly recommend the collapsible ones.
Yeah, I don't want to buy, I don't use it that often. I don't want to buy, they're expensive. They're worth it. They are totally worth it if you're picking up that much Rival, but they're expensive.
Yeah.
Okay, so this last one is kind of a bonus question, but we're going to do it anyway. Go ahead, Vile. Go ahead.
All right, I was going to say, the 1999 Laramie Super Soaker Power Pack, a backpack reservoir water blaster, featured a rotating nozzle with four different spray options. Which of the following sweeps was the name of the fan type spray? Was it A, sweep stream, B, clean sweep, or C, sweep spray 3000?
I'm going to go with A. It's the gut feeling on this one.
The sweep stream?
You are absolutely 100% correct. That's really... Bray is going to be so upset when he hears this, because he...
struggled so hard.
He struggled. He struggled with this question.
Oh, man.
That's really, really funny. Yes, congratulations. Perfect score.
Clean sweep.
Perfect score. Woo! A clean sweep.
It's
that's
true.
Absolutely right.
So I just did
what, yeah?
When are we getting a FNC Jeopardy?
We have talked about this. We have actually talked about doing some kind of a game show. It is just a nascent idea. We're very, very busy, and it's the kind of thing that I think we would do for like a charity fundraiser stream.
That'd be fun.
Or you know, or some kind of special event, but we haven't booked it. I just realized I made a big mistake, and I did not say the name of the person who is actually going to win the thing first. Because they're supposed to be sitting through this with their fingers crossed the whole time. So I may actually come in here and edit this. So this may be like an awkward sounding edit. I don't care. Okay. Now that the time travel is over, congrats. Congrats. And thank you for playing our
game.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It
was a fun game. I liked it.
Yeah. I don't know. Did I make the questions too easy this time? Or I guess I had a strong feeling you would know the answer to the first one. And I do try to have an easy one. You know, I was like, you're in that world enough. You know all these people. Everybody.
I was there.
Well, you were there, right? That helps. You know, the fact that you got the other two just by thinking it through, I love that. Well done. I don't know if that means
I will say question three, complete guess. This is like we're going 100% gut feeling on that third one.
Okay, couple more things to talk about today. One being that the Protean by Flagonial is here. It's a modular, adaptable, 3D printed flywheeler. What do y'all think of it? Have you checked it out, both of you?
I probably glanced over it like a week or two ago when it kind of like quickly went up on Silver Fox's thing.
Right.
Isn't it a Griffin like remix? Technically,
it's like the next stage of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember. I just remember the shape of it.
I don't think it's like a remix per se. Well, I can't open it because I'm screwed up my screen recording and now it's too late to fix it. And so gotcha. I can't open anything in Discord. I'm such a such a professional. It's just incredible. Boomstick, have you seen this thing yet? Have you had a chance to look at it? Like I said,
yeah,
I know you're behind
I've seen it. It's very Griffin-esque. Like, even if it's not an official remix, like, obviously it has a lot of the main body of, or at least a lot of the body styling of the Griffin, and it maintains a lot of the Griffin's modularity and its ability to be built whichever way you want it to be built. Like, there's already a variety of stock options available for the Proteon, as well as cages and everything like that. It's I enjoy seeing new designs like this. I don't hate me, Nerf community, but I will say I personally hate building Griffins. I know some people love them. I can't stand building Griffins. I've built exactly one, and I've repaired like three.
Any particular reason?
Too many screws.
Well,
it's too many screws. Well,
okay. So,
and me and my go ahead.
Here's the Silver Fox description on the Proteon. Proteon, Flagonial's follow-up to the Griffin. This blaster features takedown pins and quick disconnect bullet connectors for easy swappable cage setups, and can also come in either single or dual stage variants, with the single stage featuring an option to use a B-car, which I was looking at the video, the release video, and the B-car like goes in and like hand screws into the thing. It's pretty cool. Also features an adjustable stock using worker notch rods, and the large battery tray in the rear of the blaster ensures you can use even larger sized batteries. I mean, it sounds like he's attempting to address what you're talking about, the sort of like difficulty of assembly and reassembly. The goal of it, I think, is to maybe to fix that problem.
I mean, it's definitely one that like I want to try my hand at building a Proteon. Like, when it first came out, I looked at it, like my workbench has been a little bit overpacked for me right now. I haven't had a chance to properly look into building one, but it's been one that I've seen and gone, that looks neat. I would like to build one. Like, even though I have my own particular issues with the Griffin, this looks like you said, it has addressed some of my issues right off the bat. And like, and at least in my opinion, it does at least look better than the Griffin as well.
How does something like this has been a more obviously Momentum is a brushless thing in kind of a different, but like just in general, you know, there was sort of a, I feel like the last year or so, year or two was this sort of like Springer revolution. We were seeing a lot of primary class rifle style, rifle or carbine style Springer, MagFed Springers,
actions, and I feel like all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and I feel like now we're starting to see a build up and a resurgence of various types of flywheelers, SBF as well. It's almost like a whole sort of like market is like springing up now. How do these things compare? Like, if you were going to be the flywheeler person on your team, would you be looking at one of these? What catches your eye? How do they compare to each other?
Well, I mean, personally, I would say it all comes down to budget. Like, if you don't have the brushless budget or the brushless tech know-how to build your own, that brushless budget. If you don't have either of those, I could see this being easily a next go-to option as far as a 3D printed blaster. Really, I think the Proteon's main competition is going to be things like the Strife X or the Omnia or even the DZP Mark III. I think those will be its main competition, because there is that kind of step between brushed to brushless, because there is a lot of really nice things you get with brushless, but obviously there's that initial cost. So if you're not looking to take that initial cost step into brushless, I could very easily see this being like, I still see Griffins on the field. Like, despite my own personal opinions about the Griffin, I still see them on the field all the time. So it's not like these kinds of options have gone by the wayside.
Right.
They are still very much on the field. I mean, I think the main thing that we've seen with 3D printed blasters is, especially in the past year, is kind of the Flycore builds were kind of the main thing for like the past year or so. So this has been the first non-Flycore build that I've seen in a while for a flywheel build. Pardon, I have a cat next to me and he is now wanting attention, so hopefully he's not too noisy.
What's the cat's name?
Oh, that's Tanjiro.
Tanjiro. An orange cat?
It is.
Aw, a buddy. What a buddy.
KT instantly knew. That's an orange cat, isn't it? I could hear it. I could hear it on that meow. That's an orange cat. I know
also,
it.
Well, also, the name was also Tanjiro.
Oh, so. I know.
But yes. No, definitely. I know my orange cats. Flycore is a really interesting point there, too. That was sort of the, like, where, you know, things were kind of being built around the Caliburn, Talonclaw sort of universe for quite a while for springers, and then Flycore sort of became that for flywheelers for a minute. And so, yeah, this does kind of stand out in that way. I'm curious to see how the modularity really, like, how big it's so cool. Watching the video where he's demonstrating it, just how quickly it comes apart, goes back together with a new layout. It's just very, very cool. How many people really need that? Like, if you're going from event to event, I feel like a lot of the people who are, like, really serious, they you know, you're running your blaster at your, like, local weekend events where people are probably, like, a little fuzzy about the FPS limit. Like, it's not a huge deal if you're, like, you know, you don't have to, like, retune your entire blaster. Or we trust you to just turn the knob on your thing and turn it down a little bit or whatever. As opposed to going to a competitive event. There is nobody going to a competitive event every weekend. We don't have that many. So it's like, I feel like a lot of people between the major events, they've probably built a whole new blaster most of the time anyway.
Yeah. I can agree with that. Like, I've tried multiple blasters that are, is multiple flywheel blasters of that too, that have had kind of a easier swap flywheel cage system. And for me personally, I find that I'd rather just have a separate blaster for a separate FPS cap. Again, this is specifically on the brushed blasters, because obviously most brushless blasters, or at least some brushless blasters, do give you a variety of speeds that you can go at. But outside of that, even with my springers, I don't really use modular springers that go from FPS to FPS. I just have another blaster. But I'm also the kind of guy that swaps from blaster to blaster all the time anyway. So if you're a person who has, like, one specific thing that you want to use, whether it's like the Lynx or Talonclaw or anything of that nature, where it's like, no, this is the form factor that I play at, and so I want this same form factor for every battle, no matter the FPS, I could see that being useful. But as far as myself, and at least the people that I see on my field, they usually just have another blaster to run at a separate FPS.
And I mean, that's one of the things that's so much fun about this hobby is, largely speaking, stuff's cheap. You know, not to put this down at all. I would love to see, I love the concept of having one blaster that I can, like, flip some switches and swap some stuff out and have it work at any event. But when it comes down to it, when I have things that are sort of like that, I don't do it. I'm like you. I just grab something else.
This would be great for something like, for example, Maryland Mayhem, where you're going there and you only have so much luggage space. It's like,
that's all right, true.
I need a blaster for Saturday and Sunday.
That's
so I need a blaster for 120 and 160. I can build something that'll do both of those for this specific reason. So obviously this is a very specific reason to do that. But like, if you're going somewhere,
do both.
Yeah. Like, it does have its use cases for that. I just don't see it being as much used locally. Like, I think where they'll use the swapping of the cages will be between events, not like at events kind of deal.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense to me, for sure. Whatever. Time will tell. Time will tell. We'll see. I think it's a great design. Great job, Flygonial. It looks super, super, super cool. I hope Definitely. It works out. Great. You know, Silver Fox has great builds. I'm sure they'll be awesome, whoever decides to pick them up. It's always cool to see existing designs continue to evolve and move forward. And just sort of
push. Maybe we'll see some at Maryland Mayhem this year.
That's entirely possible. Silver Fox will be there, if nothing else.
Yep.
I imagine they'll be bringing some along. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, in fact, I think I remember specifically that being in the story, that they were going to bring a couple early production units to Mayhem. So I guess we'll see that.
Yep.
One last thing today. I always like to end with something a little bit lighthearted. Little round robin open discussion question, based this time around X-Shot's, one of X-Shot's new blasters. They have joined the goofy unnecessary mechanism attached to a blaster crew. I don't think they've really done something like this before. There were the plastic spinning wheels, I guess, on the dinosaur ones for a little bit, but otherwise I think it's the first time they've had something like this. The Blaster Corn, which is a blaster that looks like a unicorn. When you fire it, the wings flap. And I
actually didn't know that.
Have you not seen this yet? Oh, my God.
I've seen the image. I've not seen it. I've seen the Blaster Corn. I had not heard the fact that the wings open. That's so hilarious.
We have not seen it in action, but it says on the thing, and there's like a little motion line to show that, like, yeah, the wings flap.
It reminds me of that that old Nerf crossbow thing where, like, you pull it back and the crossbow arms move. Okay.
Well, and the working theory is that this is a reskin of the kickback. But instead of moving the thing back, it makes the wings flap, right?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I love it.
I do, too. I'm pumped about this. I just think it's great. Because like you were saying, like, Nerf has done this a bunch. Dart Zone has done it. Dart Zone made the Stranger Things Demogorgon blaster with the flappy mouth thing.
Oh yeah,
the only one in that series I didn't buy. But they've done the, like, goofy funny flappy thing, and Nerf has done tons of stuff. Like, Nerf had the what was the line, what's the vintage line with all the animal based ones? There's like the
Max
Scorpion
Force.
Max Force,
Mighty Max. Max Force, that was it.
No Mighty Nerf has had multiple entire lines based around this kind of stuff. Where like animal body parts move or whatever. So this is your chance to think, what would you like, what goofy unnecessary mechanism would you like added to, like, the firing mechanism of a blaster just for fun? You get to pick anything, whatever you want it to be. It could be an animal thing that does it or whatever. Oh man, the freaking podcast music.
Not so much unnecessary attachments. So, like, I'm kind of going off question. I apologize for that. I just want more larger ammo or throwables or anything like that. Like, give me more of that. Like, Nerf has given us some, but I don't think any of the other ones. I mean, Busby had Mega.
You're less off topic than you think you are, because I distinctly remember Zombie Strikes holders that attach to blasters that hold those throwable saw blades.
Well, they even had the one blaster that had a secondary trigger that would actually not the right. not the the brain saw or whatever, but the little pistol one, and it would actually, you know, rotate the little saw blade. It's the same thing.
I had that thing. It was amazing.
Those were really good. I actually, one thing that I'm trying to work on is a nice little blaster attachment to hold socks. I don't have something like that right now, and I know I'm going to want it for the UMBC. A way to just hold them on the blaster itself, so they're really quick to get to. Along the lines of that blade launcher.
So say, I might actually have something for that. It's not ready yet, but I have something kind of like that. Currently, it's only set up for Molly, but I could very easily add Picatinny attachment to it and throw it on a blaster.
That would be sick. That would be sick. I mean, that's
giving me an idea.
I like, socks are light enough that I would rather put them, like, I like to have less body bulk. I'm just always a less body bulk person. Okay, we're just way off the topic here. I don't care. It's fine. Whatever.
it's supposed to be lighthearted.
Someone shared a piece of shoulder armor that has Molly. And I really wanted to get just one of them as a way to carry attach a couple mag holders onto it. It just sounded like such a nice setup to not have any mags on my belt and waist, but to have them really quickly available, just sticking off my shoulder.
Can you envision that? I'm a leg person. I like it when stuff is attached to my leg.
Down.
Yeah.
Down lower on the leg. Yeah. Like on the thigh. Absolutely. Yeah,
I'm a thigh holster kind of guy. I like mag holders that are on the thigh. That's my favorite place because I don't feel it. I don't notice it. You're the same thing. It's like off your body, but it's easily reachable. Like, you know, even in a crouched position, it's actually extremely easy to reach and grab or do whatever you need. It's same boat. Love it.
Oh, can't relate. I hate things on my legs.
Oh yeah.
I find them so in the way and distracting.
It works for me if it's like a specific number of things that are like tightly strapped to my leg.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that's like bouncing around, it's awful if it bounces.
Nope.
But I also don't want too much, but like a little bit is perfect.
It's two mags on the legs, you're done. That's all I need.
Yeah, and I do like, I have a sidearm holster that I like a lot that fits a lot of different stuff. It fits my Outlaw. It fits, I was putting my Concept in it for a long time. It fits an Ultra 2. I have an Elite modded Ultra 2 that I put in there. And it sits like low enough, like it straps to a belt, but then it drops down. And it's at the right height for my hand, and that feels really, really good. But if I'm wearing that, I can't put anything else on my legs. That's it. That's all I can handle. Yeah, I didn't have an answer for this question either, so that's fine. We can just...
It's hard. Like for me, I loved all of the old Nerf ones. Like the Max,
I know there's
Force
already
line.
So many good ones. There's so many good ones.
It's hard because I don't know what else to add. They already kind of covered a lot of the bases already. What do I do? Even the kickback.
Well, I think part of the thing is like they just need to bring it back to where it's like I feel like I haven't seen a fun Nerf attachment in a while. Like Zombie Strike was. They're bringing it back, but in my opinion, they're bringing it back worse.
That's a whole other topic because the other X Shot thing that just came out. We can just talk about this.
The Zombie
instead.
Strike line that we really wanted.
Well, exactly, right?
Horror
like
series or whatever.
Horror Strike or something like that. They look really, really good. They absolutely look like the Zombie Strike revival that we wanted to see. That Nerf was unable to give us. X-Shot does what Nerfant, I guess. But at the same time, you know, we all know like X-Shot stuff always looks really impressive in pictures, and I enjoy X-Shot blasters a lot. Their build quality is universally not as high as Nerfs. And that almost makes it more frustrating because it's like they're making the stuff that we want to see, but they're not making it as well. And I don't quite know how to deal with that.
I would say that things like the Rage Fire is a great step because the plastics don't do well with heavy spring loads, but when you turn it into a flywheeler, you completely negate that problem, and the plastic is fine if it's just a flywheeler. It's just the plastic seems to weirdly be a bit more, like a little bit more brittle with that level of weight because the shell's not thick enough or the ribbing on the inside of the shell isn't thick enough or whatever, and it succumbs to that eventually, just stress fractures. But if it's a flywheeler, it's not really a whole lot to complain about, actually. It works beautifully as a flywheeler. So, I love the Rage Fire, personally.
Cross your fingers, because I dropped a little bit of speculation in this episode.
It's true.
That I think the third blaster in this series, in the Horror Fire series, which we did not get an isolated picture of by this episode time, might be a flywheeler. It looks like a crusher, and it has the front handle of a crusher, but I suspect it may actually be a Rage Fire reshell in a crusher-like shell. The Rage Fire front end is very similar to the crusher front end, but with a larger inside bore for darts. I don't know if that's just because flywheelers are inherently a little more chaotic in how they spit darts out, and so they wanted to give it more space, or that they found that the crusher one was a problem or whatever. But I have a suspicion that this one is going to be a flywheeler as well. I think that we won't have to wait too long to find out. I think that that one will also pop up on websites sooner rather than later. And then we will know. But that is my current running theory.
I'd be excited if it was. I'll be honest. Yeah. I like this whole series. That's the Goofy I want right there.
Totally.
There's your unnecessary mechanisms in Goofy. They're all X-Shot. You're doing it right here. Bringing our back zombie strike.
Are the saw blades going to be foam?
That's a question. Because even their old weird blade things were usually plastic.
Yeah. the picture does not tell.
That's
us.
True. That's something in general in the hobby that we've seen less and less of is foam attachments. They've all been like, even their melee weapons that Nerf makes are now like mostly plastic.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
And it creates a really unfortunate situation where, because you can't, like, especially like, you know, you're talking about moderating massive games, you can't moderate every single person's melee. You're already trying to chronograph every blaster. You can't like moderate every single melee item, so you wind up having to provide what people can actually use.
Cool noodle.
Whereas if there had been some consistency in creating actually safe and durable ones, it would be a lot better. I'm scrolling and looking again for the picture. Here it is. Yeah, it's really inconclusive from these pictures. You cannot tell. There's a lot of detail on the saw blades, which may or may not mean that, like, you know, they could just be harder foam. Like the, you know, there's the foam now on the edge, like the, you know, like the Minecraft ones, you know what I'm talking about? The hammer and the, where they have like a slightly harder foam and then there's plastic behind it, to the point that like, it keeps kids from just like absolutely braining each other with it, but like it doesn't make it a safe, usable melee toy.
Yeah.
So we may be getting that. Oh, well, with that, it's time for us to call it for the night. Boomstick, it's been amazing having you back on the podcast with us. And I'm excited to see you again in Maryland in just a couple weeks and a couple weeks from when people are listening to this. It's going to be really great. Thank you for everything that you do for the community and for this event. would you please tell folks where they can find you, where they can find the Marathon Foam Alliance, and that they should, because they should.
Absolutely. You can find me as Boomstick Mods on pretty much any social media site. If you look up Boomstick Mods, and you're going to find me, or if you don't find me, I'm not there. But I'm on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all that goodness. And, of course, the Maryland Foam Alliance for pretty much all of your local Maryland games. And, by the way, we do all of our events. We have all of those scheduled for the whole year. So if you're ever traveling in Maryland, we usually have something going on during the weekend. Just look up which one of our clubs is running an event. You can probably join us. It's already scheduled for the whole year on our website, MarylandFoamAlliance.com, as well as our Facebook page, our Discord, our... We also have a TikTok and YouTube for Maryland Foam Alliance, which currently is only videos that have been edited by me, but I believe Dart Sweet plans on posting some in the future. Pretty much like all for specific local event stuff, we throw stuff up there for just kind of helping to get the word out about the Maryland Foam Alliance. Mm-hmm. And hey, if you can give us some comment on some of our videos, that'd be great. Currently, we're only getting like airsofters commenting.
Oh, no. Well, that's kind of how TikTok goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's just kind of what it is. Vile.
But hey,
how about you?
Same.
You're streaming right now, probably.
Probably streaming over on Twitch. I'm either working on my Merge Masters build, which is a race at this point to try to finish it up, because I'm worried I'm not gonna. But or I'm putting together 3D printed blasters for the Rocky Mountain Rep Rat Festival for Polymaker. So I'm doing one of the two. Either way, I'll be over on Twitch at Vile_Mons.
Sick. My band has an EP coming out soon. I'll talk about that again when it happens, I guess. A little off topic, but, you know, whatever. People like to
know. It's your thing. It's a plug. It's fun.
It's important.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you the name of the band or any useful information to help you find it or anything. We'll get there. It's fine. All right. Have a great night. Thanks, everybody.